Today is 10th of July, 2018, Tuesday. So we are having our Pujana. Let us compose our mind, develop the Sada, the faith, then the Virya, then mindfully we shall commence the Puja chanting. Namo Bansi Si Jia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Si Jia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Si Jia Moni Fo. Namo Ami Sin Pusa. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Ami Tho Fo. Namo Ami Tho Fo. Namo Ami Tho Fo. Namo Mila Fo. Namo Mila Fo. Namo Mila Fo. Namo Pusen Pusa. Namo Pusen Pusa. Namo Pusen Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava. Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, you can be seated. Then we shall turn to page 1 of our chanting book. Then we will chant from the Vandana onwards. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Panatipata Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Adinadana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Kamesu Michachara Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Musavada Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Suramiraya Majjhapamadatthana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Now we are chanting the Padipa Puja, offering of likes. Ganna sarappa dipena dipena tamadang sina tiloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonudang ganda sambarayutena dopena hang sugang hina. Pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bacana mutamang vanna ganda guno petang etang kusuma santatin pujayami monindasa siri pada sarorohe ujemi buddhang kusimena nena punena matena sahotu mokang pupang milayati yata idang me kayo tata yati vinasa bhavang adivase tuno bante paniyang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivase tuno bante pale parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivase tuno bante bojanang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang. Now we shall chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition as soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits born of our offering, may our spiritual faculties of saddha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers, sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Paja. Oh, Bimbi can offer first. Yeah, sadhu. Yeah. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah. Okay, now we shall pay respect to Pajama. Buddhang Pajami. Dhammang Pajami. Sanghang Pajami. Okay, you can be seated. Then we can have our half an hour of meditation. We are off the light.
Thank you.
those who still wants to meditate, you can continue. For those who have enough, slowly, mindfully, come out of the meditation. Yeah. We turn to page 6. We will do the invocation to the devas. Invocations to the devas in this universe, in their entirety. Let the devas or deities come here. Let them hear the good teaching or doctrines of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta Chakawalisu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokadang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Iti peso Bhagava Arahang Sammasambuddho Vijja Charana Sampanno Sugato Lokavidu Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Satta Deva Manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehi Paseko Opanayiko Pachatang Veditabo Vinohiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Ujupatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Samichipatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Yadidang Chattari Purisa Yukani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savakasango Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Jankineyo Anjali Karaniyo Anuttarang Punyaketang Lokasati Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Pajapa. Pedang pujeni, damang pujeni, sanghang pujeni. Okay, you can be seated. Then there's some two sheets of notes. that I have given out. Those who don't have, you can collect from me. Huh? Anybody without the notes? Here. Anybody don't have? I got three more sets. Pastor Stephanie one. Yeah. Okay. What about the other side? Oh, okay. These are the outline short notes for our Thursday class, 28 June, and the other one is 1st of July, Sunday class. Okay, I will go through quickly we all so that we can have more time for the topic on karma. We will start out with the outline short notes for Thursday class 28 June 1. Okay. The point number one is Brother Teo read through the 21st of June, Thursday class outline short notes and explain certain key points as he reads them. One of the key points is on anger, fear, phobia, greed, and other emotions. They were never you because they were not present before the stirring of the mundane mind. These emotions were not inherent within your true nature. They are actually conditioned arising mind state, dependent originating, following nature's law. Following the 12 links or Paticca Samuppada as taught by the Buddha. With this understanding, one can just allow such mind states to settle down on their own to enable one to realize the natural state of inner peace, stillness, and tranquility before the stirring of the mind. So this one is quite straightforward. I think most of you who already develop your meditation, you already have the understanding. Just give me a minute. So this one is for those who already know how to meditate. Whatever mind state that arises, you don't have to fight, suppress, or do anything to it. Just relax, silent, then allow the mind to return to its original state before the stirring. Then the true mind will arise. Okay, note number two. Brother pointed out that a common mistake among cultivators is to ask such question when they want to learn meditation. What meditation do you teach? Is it Vipassana? But theory reiterated. I got use such word. Oh. Maybe this one is the person who did use this word. Brother Teo reiterated that Vipassana cannot be practiced because it's an insight or awakening. Vi means the three universal characteristics of nature, and Passana means to insight into. Hence, Vipassana is an insight and not a practice. Such questions come from the thought that doesn't understand. For Vipassana is an awakening and insight wisdom that arise when the mind is silent and just aware to insight into phenomena. The awareness will be aware of what is going on within the mind. There is no thought, or knowledge involved in this realization. It is just an insight into truth when the mind becomes so quiet, so sensitive, and mindful. Most meditation are thought-based, which uses thought to come up with methods and techniques to meditate. Then who meditate? The thought meditate. We are following a series of instructions given, not knowing that these methods and techniques are just skillful means to anchor and train the mind. Without this basic understanding, one will think that one is practicing the so-called meditation or doing vipassana. So this is a very important understanding. Yeah? So do not make this type of mistake. If you are attracted to the word without understanding, then this problem will arise. Yeah? When you understand what is meditation, you will know how to meditate. So it's more important to understand what is meditation as taught by the Buddha. Then note number 3, according to Lord Buddha, meditation is very simple. When you understand, it's just developing heedfulness. Just train the mind to be ever mindful and use this trained mind to cultivate noble eightfold path. As we progress with more right views, avijja, ignorance, is weakened. Then the next link, which is sankhara, mental activity, will be less. So there is more awareness and less heedless habitual thinking. Without the habitual thinking, one is aware most of the time. With the further straightening of one's view to weaken the avijja further, the stillness of mind will grow more and more, until one day when avijja is no more, the awakening happens. Some people have the past cultivation to support them. People like Sariputta, Kondanya, and the 5 ascetics were able to awaken through listening or reflection. Listening or reflecting on the Buddha's word via Suttamaya Panya and Cittamaya Panya. The first two turning wisdom. But most cultivators will need to stabilize their second turning wisdom to realize the silent mind, to awaken to the 3 universal characteristics. Excuse me. Hence, whether awakening is via Suttamaya Panya, Cittamaya Panya, or Bhavanamaya Panya depends very much on the individual's past cultivation. When one's spiritual faculties are developed, the moment or the minute we sit, awareness is already present. One only needs to stabilize it. The determination to be ever mindful to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path will keep cultivator on track, leading to the awakening when the conditions are met. However, if the spiritual faculties are not present, then one cannot meditate unless one uses a skillful means or technique to overcome the 5 mental hindrances temporarily. The 5 mental hindrances hinder one from entering the meditative states of inner peace and inner awareness. Then the question arises, why one has the mental hindrance? The reason is due to habitual thinking. The reason is due to the habitual thinking mind creating thoughts through avijja or ignorance. The mind sweeping method is an efficient or effective tool because it can help decondition the heedless thinking mind. There are no thoughts involved. As thinking reduces, the mind becomes quieter, but this state is still not stable. This is the reason why a skillful means or an object of meditation is needed to stabilize this mind. The Buddha recommended anapanasati.
Eventually, the mind becomes more and more quiet, leading to paucity and eventually stillness of mind. This is the meditative mind, which can make one peaceful while in the midst of life. Note number 7. Once the mind enters sati, there is no need to use any object of meditation anymore. Many people are so fearful when they experience no breath. This is actually a sign of good progress. Brathil mentioned that his nature gained this understanding through his own past cultivation, even though he had no prior knowledge of meditation at that time. Then we turn to page 2. He went into absorption the first time he did it. But later, another Thai monk, come teacher Prachanyantra, taught him the highest meditation via developing the daily mindfulness. And this made him realize that his mind was still in a conditioned state of apana samadhi. Bradio decided to release the concentrated mind state energy he was in and use the silent mind to meditate via the daily mindfulness while in the midst of life. His sati was so stable that even the most subtle movement of mind could be detected. He was fully aware throughout the day. At every moment of sense door consciousness and perception, he was in sati. The awareness and phenomena move as one, and there is no thinking at all. There was just pure awareness at every moment of sense experience. Then note number 8. Human beings can only do one thing at a time. We are either silent without thought, or busy caught up with the thought process. We react very fast to our sense experience or sense perception, due to our habitual tendency and self-delusion. Instead of using the mind to live life and think only when necessary, we have given thought so much meaning that it has dominated our life. To think, stir, and react every time we come into contact with sense experience. Through our daily constant stirring of the mind via like and dislike, as these are mental hindrances, they will prevent us from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner awareness, thereby making us heedless. Then number 9. Mental suppression, concentration, noting, verbalization, etc. will cause the thought to be more active. Bertier used the analogy of swimming with a float to explain how one should meditate. Applying Archimedes' principle to swimming, the weight of the water displaced by our body is equal to the upthrust or the buoyancy force created. If we just relax and do not struggle, this upthrust, which is equivalent to the mass of water displayed by our body, will push the body up because the natural state of this body is buoyancy. That is, our body is slightly lighter than water. Similarly, the natural state of mind is tranquility, stillness, and awareness. If we know how to relax, we can swim easily. Similarly, meditation becomes very easy if we know how to just relax and silence our mind. That is, do not struggle or try to meditate via verbalization. The moment we are without thought, we are already aware, so there is no need to try to be aware. The float is useful to assist us to swim initially. Similarly, methods and techniques in meditation are skillful means, like the float. Initially, one may need them, but eventually, we have to give them up, as long as we don't give up all these methods and techniques, or any object of meditation. We will never understand how to meditate. Once the mind has entered sati, there is no need for a meditation object to anchor the mind anymore. It is already aware naturally. So Master Huining's approach to meditation takes us direct to the true mind. Without thought, we are already aware. And that is your true mind. Then one can see clearly with mindfulness how avijja, mainly self-delusion, causes one to react and stir one's mind, thereby creating the mental hindrance. These mental hindrances are the source of evil roots. Avijja arises due to our wrong view. So Bratio advises us to straighten our view first. When Sankara ceases, we can then insight into phenomena. Most of us has been taught the traditional thought-based meditation until you are so conditioned. It makes you believe that meditation must involve the thought, not knowing that it is this thinking or chattering mind that you use to meditate is the one creating more sankhara to delude you. In the field of meditation and spirituality, thinking is not required. What is needed is wisdom or understanding. Thinking is only necessary for us to use it to live life, to develop skills and knowledge, and perform certain mechanical tasks in life. Thought is a tool for us to use. Hence, the user of thought is very important. If the user of thought is wise, should be wise, the word. If the user of thought is wise, then thought becomes right thought. Means, if the user of thought has wisdom, then thought becomes right thought. Note number 13. Bertil mentioned the sad case of a college student who shot himself in the toilet recently. Such cases happen due to avijja, lack of understanding. And this shows the power of thought, which can delude and deceive us into acting out foolishly. It is not about being poor or rich. A lot of such cases are due to karmic consequences from the past. So all this depression, unhappiness, deep resentment, sorrow and all those things can lead to the wrong view, the wrong thought that were conditioned that form a mind to simply do things. Then the last point, point 14. It is important for cultivator to understand that no amount of practice can free us. It is only understanding or wisdom that can free and liberate our mind. So all this practice is mostly thought-based. Because we fail to inquire who practice the thought practice. The actual meditation doesn't involve any thought process practicing. It's just developing the cultivation of the silent mind. Meditation can only be understood when it's done appropriately with the right understanding. Means thought must not interfere. When thought ceases to be, the silent mind will arise, the true mind will arise. It is this silent mind, the meditative mind, the true mind that can insight into phenomena and awaken the former mind. Not the other way around. That's the reason why thought-based meditation cannot liberate the mind. Then we go to the next outline notes. 1st of July, 2018. Point number one, Brad Teo went through the J. Krishnamurti Daily Code on Extraordinary Seeing. So this extraordinary seeing is the same as our direct seeing. That is to see things as they are without interference from past experiences and the thought. Then Brother Teo did a detailed review of the outline short notes for Thursday class dated 21st of June 2018. Note number 3. When there is mental stirring, one cannot be aware. This one you have to make a note. When you are not mindful or aware, it means your thought process is there, your sankhara movement is there, means there is mental activity or stirring. Number 4. Whatever that is logical may not always be the truth. Knowledge is not wisdom. Only wisdom or understanding free one from suffering. If one merely tells oneself not to be angry when one is angry, this will not help, as this is a form of suppression, not wisdom. Because when similar issue or situation or condition crops up again, anger would still arise. However, if one understands via acceptance of the fact that things and people are just the way they are, then anger cannot arise. One will not react with one will not react with anger to any other situation again after having this understanding. Point number 6. Brother Teo explained the difference between path and fruition enlightenment stages. Under the 7 stages of purification or Sata Visuddhi, there is a stage called purification of knowledge and vision of what is path and non-path. In Pali it is called Magamaga Jnanadasana Visuddhi. Path leads to wisdom and non-path. Path leads to wisdom and enlightenment, whereas non-path lead to delusion and deviant path. Path here means your cultivation is on the right path, leading to enlightenment. And when you are on the path, your enlightenment factor will keep on arising. One must have already got a glimpse of Nibbana, or the cessation of form and mind, to be on the path. Fruition here means having reached the completion of cultivation of the path, leading to stability of understanding that can enable one to share and teach those understanding. If one is on the right path, the 7 factors of enlightenment are sati, dhamma vichaya, virya, piti, pasati, samadhi, and upeka. Born of wisdom, equanimity born of wisdom, they will keep on arising. All the 4 stages of sainthood enlightenment of Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami, and Arahant have their own path and friction. The 4 stages of sainthood enlightenment, linking the 10 fetters that binds living being to samsara, will also discuss and explain. So you want to understand more, you listen to the recording. Then Brother Jin Hao asked whether he can contemplate while doing walking meditation. After he has reached some point of calmness, Brother Teo advised Brother Jin Hao to find this out himself, meaning investigate into it, instead of waiting for his answer. The question should not be what one should be doing. If you want to do walking meditation to develop the mindfulness, then just go ahead and do. He should just walk naturally until the body and mind become one without the thought saying that he wants to be mindful, as advised by Brother Teo. Once that happens, then the form and mind that is in sati will know what sati is. Without words. If he wants to contemplate, then he just contemplate via a calm mind in creativity. Just do, and the result will automatically arise if he has done it correctly with the appropriate faith, sincerity, and understanding. Then Sister Tammy asks, After doing the mind sweeping method, come metta meditation to decondition the heedless thinking. The mind is calmer. Then I am supposed to stabilize it via anapanasati. But I'm averse towards anapanasati. So is there any other way to stabilize the mindfulness? Bertil advised Tammy that any method or skillful means or technique that she is familiar and comfortable with, she can use them. There is no hard and fast rule, rigid rules. It all depends on the individual's preference. If there is love and torpor during meditation, what must I do? There is a second question. Then Bertil replied, what do you normally do? Tammy replied, I try to open my eyes. Then Brother Teo asked, does it help? And are you able to stabilize your mindfulness? Tammy replied, sometimes it helps to keep me awake, but I still cannot stabilize my mindfulness. Brother Teo then advised, can you remember what I used to advise you all when it comes to sloth and torpor? What are you supposed to inquire? The first inquiry, what is sloth and torpor? Yes, it is one of the five mental hindrances. So don't try to suppress or fight or do away or push away. We are aversion or disliking it. In doing so, you are creating another mental hindrance of aversion or dislike. This is delusion. Why can't you just develop the acceptance of it via understanding that without the spiritual faculties, the mental hindrance will continue to arise? So don't create the mental hindrance of aversion or dislike unnecessarily. Understanding this, you can then apply the five ways to overcome unwholesome thought as taught by the Buddha. First way is to think of the direct opposite wholesome thought or spiritual faculty of virya to overcome it. If this is not effective, then the second way is to think of the consequence of allowing this mental hindrance of sloth and torpor to stay in your mind. It will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner awareness. So you have to abandon it via the third way, which is the awareness way. Just be aware of the sloth and torpor, or be with it via maintaining silence to be at peace with it without arising any aversion or mental hindrance. Without aversion, there is no mental hindrance. Then sati will take over. When this happens, all of a sudden there will be a shift in consciousness that can result in great awareness of your mind, leading to the clarity and virya. Then the sloth and torpor is totally gone. This cultivation is based on the fourth foundation of mindfulness within the Satipatthana Sutta. They call it Dhammanupassana. The first category of practice of Dhammanupassana is mindfulness of the five mental hindrances. When the mental hindrance of sloth and torpor is present, the Buddha say, just aware. Imply no aversion or dislike towards it. No suppression, no control. Just maintain awareness and be at peace with the sloth and torpor. And when the shift of consciousness occurs, you will know how the arisen mental hindrance of sloth and torpor cease to be. You will also come to know how the earlier haven't arisen mental hindrance come to be. Because before you meditate, there is no sloth and torpor. So you will understand that sloth and torpor is dependent, originating due to your lack of virya, or your body is too tired. Once you see this in the meditation, you will understand how to root out this sloth and torpor. So this is the outline. These are the outline short notes that we have developed for your reading. So that you can develop whatever understanding. Yeah? You go back and read through, reflect, contemplate, then follow it up. Eh? These notes are important. This will help you. Because apart from Heart Sutta, these are meditative questions. And these are Dhamma sharing, which is more relevant to meditation. Eh? It will let you understand better. Okay, now we can continue with the topic. Eh? The Buddha and his teaching, chapter 18 on karma. We are at page 344. Eh? I will get PG to continue from there. Then we can have a good discussion. We still got 1 hour, just nice. Okay, PG, come.
Good evening, Bratio, Mrs. Teo, and to all Kalyanamitas. Today's subject is karma. Page 344, we are going to this subject on the five niyamas. According to Buddhism, there are five orders or processes, niyamas, which operate in the physical and mental realms. They are, number one, otu niyama, physical inorganic order, that is, seasonal phenomena of winds and rains, the unerring order of seasons, characteristic seasonal changes and events, causes of winds and rains, nature of heat, etc., belong to this group. Bijaniyama, order of germs and seeds, physical organic order, that is, rice produced from rice seed, sugary taste from sugar cane or honey, and peculiar characteristics of certain fruits. The scientific theory of cells and genes and the physical similarity of twins may be ascribed to this order. Number three is karma niyama, order of act and result, that is, desirable and undesirable acts produce corresponding good and bad results. As surely as water seeks its own level, so does karma. Given opportunity, produce its inevitable result, not in the form of a reward or punishment, but as an innate sequence. This sequence of deed and effect is as natural and necessary as the way of the sun and the moon, and is the retributive principle of karma. Inherent in karma is also the continuative principle. Manifold experiences, personal characteristics, accumulated knowledge, and so forth are all indelibly recorded in the palimpsest-like mind. All these experiences and characters transmigrate from life to life. Through lapse of time, they may be forgotten, as in the case of our experiences of our childhood. Infant prodigies and wonderful children who speak in different languages without receiving any instructions are noteworthy examples of the continuative principle of karma. Number four is Dhamma Niyama, or nature's order. Order of the norm, that is the natural phenomena occurring at the birth of a bodhisattva and in his last birth. Gravitational and other similar laws of nature. The reason for being good, etc., may be included in this group. This is what we always say as the Four Noble Truths. Number five is Citta Niyama, order of mind or psychic law, that is, processes of consciousness, constituents of consciousness, power of mind, including telepathy, telethesia, retrocognition, premonition, clairvoyance, clairaudience, thought reading, and other psychic phenomena which are inexplicable to modern science. Every mental and physical phenomena can be explained by these five embracing five orders of processes, which are the laws in themselves. Karma as such is only one of these five orders. Like all other natural laws, they demand no lawgiver. Of these five, the physical inorganic order, the physical organic order, and the order of the norm, that is the Dharma Niyama, are more or less of the mechanical type, though they can be controlled to some extent by human ingenuity and the power of mind. For example, fire normally burns, and extreme cold freezes. But man has walked unscathed over fire and meditated naked on Himalayan snows. Horticulturists have worked wonders with flowers and fruits, and yogis have performed levitation. Psychic law is equally mechanical, but Buddhist training aims at control of mind, which is possible by right understanding and skillful volition. Karma law operates quite automatically, and when karma is powerful, man cannot interfere with its inexorable result, though he may desire to do so. But here also right understanding and skillful volition can accomplish much and mold the future. Good karma persisted in can thwart the reaping of bad. Karma is certainly an intricate law, whose working is fully comprehended only by a Buddha. The Buddhist aims at final destruction of all karma. I thought karma cannot be destroyed.
Yeah, a lot of what has been written by this author, a lot of area, they are not correct. Others we will go through. Huh?
Okay, karma vipaka, fruit of action, is one of the four unthinkables. Atinteya states the Buddha in the Anguttara.
Anguttara Nikaya. Okay, we go back to page 344. So this one, the Pancha Niyama, the five universal order, means the five great universal law of nature that governs all of life and existence within the conditioned world. There are only these five. These five are very comprehensive. But this author don't seem to have the correct understanding. That's why the first Uto Niyama, he couldn't explain it clearly. Here he said, Uto Niyama means physical inorganic order. You don't have to use the word inorganic. Once it's physical, it's no longer organic. That's why you got law of physics, law of chemistry, and all this thing. So these are the physical order. All physical law, they are subject to this Uto Niyama. Means when it comes to law of physics, law of chemistry, everything that the scientists understand apart from the biological order, they all fall under this physical law of nature. So it's called Uto Niyama. But what is written here, they only tell you like seasonal phenomena of wind and rain. That is a small part of physics. Then the unerring order of season, this is actually part of geography. An event causes of wind and rain, nature of heat, etc., belong to this group. But he didn't manage to include all the law of physics and chemistry. In fact, whatever gravity, everything is under here. But he go and put it under Dhamma Niyama. Dhamma Niyama, he go and quote under number 4. Gravitation and other similar law of nature. No, that one is under physical law. Dhamma Niyama is different. I will explain it when I come to that point. Then the second universal order of Bija Niyama. This is biological order. It covers all biological things, including genetics and all those things. So whatever that is organic in nature means having cells and all those things, like the human being, the animals, the fishes, even the plants. They have these cells and organic component. So we call it biological order because these are all under biology. Yeah, we study them under biology. Genetic theory is also under biology. Anatomy, botany, and whatever that has to do with the organic formation, cells and all those things. So here, he just say order of germs and seed. Actually, it's a lot more. Then rice produced from rice, seed, sugar, taste from sugar cane. These are actually very brief description of the biological order. The biological order is a lot more complicated and more comprehensive than this. You have to understand biological order means there is a nature's law that governs the possibility of how things happen, even mutation of the cells, then how mind state affect the quality of cells, the behavior of cells. Then when it comes to like reproductive aspect of the biological order, they have their nature's law. You can only crossbreed, let's say, goat. They used to crossbreed this type of goat. In Europe, the goats are very much bigger. No? Do you understand? But they are not tough, understand? Huh? But in Asia, tropic country, our goats are smaller, but they are very tough, understand? So what they did was, when I was in the university that time, I get to know these few professors, two or three of them from India. So they were given some grants to do this thesis, or they were given the task to come up with crossbreeding. So they crossed the German goat with our Malaysian goat. First few times failed. Then after that, he came up with a bright idea. He said, look for a place where the weather is more cooling, like Germany. So we found a very shady place with the appropriate condition. Then throughout the year, it's cooling. Then we also like induce some form of cooling during normal day without rain. We actually artificially release water. We allow water pipe on the rooftop and other things. So it was successful. Then the crossbreed came out very, very well, very beautiful. So these two professors, they try to like commercialize it, but not easy because you want to commercialize it. You need to have suitable condition for this type of crossbreed to really grow up. And then he got to look for a type of grass which is not the usual grass that goat, our Malaysian goat, eat. Then through that discovery, he realized this crossbreed can survive. So what I'm trying to explain to you is this biological order has its own set of nature's law. You cannot like crossbreed a goat with a cow or a horse. Cannot. It has to be same species or similar species. Then even the plant, now got a lot of musang king. You can go and do what they call What do you call? You want to get a sample, a sampling from the tree. Budding, is it called? Bud grafting, bud grafting. So they come up with all this technique, and they know you bud graft, you can only get back the same plant, understand? Or? You cannot expect you bud graft the normal D24 and get Musang King. You cannot, understand? Or? But I don't know whether you can crossbreed Musang King with some other durian or not. That one, I don't know. Maybe it's possible. So, in the field of genetic engineering, they have actually used science to come up with a lot of discovery, but a lot of them are harmful to human body. They call it what? Genetically modified. Is it GM, what, GMA or what? Genetically modified. O for what? Never mind. We know that they come out with this. Then they use a lot of chemical pesticide and all those things. Then sometimes they inject in growth hormone and all those things to accelerate the growth process of all these chickens or whatever. So science, if you use it appropriately, then it's useful. But you use it for profit, for gain, means negatively, without ethic, then it can lead to problem, because the motivation is profit. Then a lot of this, what they call advancement in science and technology, you have to really develop the understanding and wisdom so that our civilization don't go the wrong way. So these first two laws, Uttu Niyama and Bija Niyama, they are related to the science. These are scientific law of nature. So scientists are very good in Uttu Niyama and Bija Niyama. That's why we can have such benefit from the advancement of science and technology. Our civilization benefited. So our last 30-40 years of advancement, you can see the big jump in understanding of science and technology that has transformed our civilization to such extent that our human life, most of the human race on this planet Earth, the last 30-40 years, they have got to, they have the ability to experience so many beautiful things that our, even my parents and my forefather never get to experience. Not only the food, the good food, the various variety and all things, but the comfort of life, the way our technology progresses, the field of science, engineering, all things. So like they used to say, sooner or later, not long, every part in your body, you can get a replacement. They know how to do it. Then also, the medical science also has improved a lot. But there are a lot of things that relates to ethic. Is the human race is still not so ethical yet. Most of them are very, very unethical. So, all motivated by profit. Especially the pharmaceutical industry. Our Vincent, not around, he always tell me, they don't believe all these pharmaceutical fellows. Especially when you want to buy certain vitamins or what, or multivitamins or whatever. He said, you have to be careful where he came out from that line. So these two parts I want to clarify, so that you have clear understanding of what is Uttu Niyama, what is Bija Niyama. Then the third one, Karma Niyama, is law of karma. These are easy to understand. These are easy to relate. So here he also make a few mistakes. He say, under karma niyama, page 345, order of act and result. This is definitely not the correct definition of karma. It means what? The mental intention, understand not? Moral causation. So it's not just act and result. Then Newton's law, to every action there's an equal opposite reaction. That is not karma. That is a physical law of cause and effect. But law of karma here involves mental intention. That's why it's called chetana. Then I used to use these words to describe it. Moral causation. You understand? Moral means it involves ethic, right and wrong. Moral. The moral ethics. So it's a moral causation. Then he say, as surely as water seeks its own level, this is physics, understand now? Law of gravity, nothing to do with karma niyama. Because this karma niyama is a nature's law, it acts on its own. So this part is also not correct. Then he said, this sequel of deed and effect is as natural and necessary as the way the sun and the moon and the retributive principle of karma. Actually, wrong comparison. Sun and moon got no mental intention. These are gravity. The orbits of sun and gravity, sun and moon and all things, these are based on physics, law of physics, gravity. This one should be understood today. That's why I say he mixed up a lot of things. Then inherent in karma is also the continuity principle. That's why when you don't have enough understanding, you will use all these words and mix them up. Then manifold experience, personal characteristics, accumulated knowledge and so forth are all indelibly recorded in the palisade like mind. Then all these experience and characters transmigrate from life to life. It's not like that, understand? The Buddha never teach transmigration, understand? He never teach a permanent unchanging entity that transmigrate, understand? From life to life. No. He teaches rebirth, consciousness. It's not something that migrate there. So this part also not correct. Not appropriate.
What? Can I ask you? Transmigration, yes. If I'm not wrong, is very much what do you call that? A theory in the Buddhist, the Hindu.
Not only Hindu, Tibetan also.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, they say reincarnate. Understand? You reincarnate means that soul inside your body, they believe in a permanent soul that reincarnate. Transmigrate and continue. No. The Buddha said no. Because they cannot understand that part. The karmic nature. I better use the whiteboard to explain to you again. You remember this word? Karmic nature. You see, each and every one of us, we have our individual karmic nature. And this is part of nature's law. All of your karmic activity, action, every segment of life you come since the beginningless until now, the summation of all of your karmic activity means jatena. Moral intention, mental intention that you arise through every segmented life. You sum all together, they form your karmic nature. So this one is recorded in nature. In nature. Means it's nature's law. So this one don't transmigrate from one life to the next life. Understand that? You understand? This karmic nature will record everything. Then when there is condition, depending on which determining thought moment, like I say, every karmic activity, there are 7 thought moments where you input the decision. They call it the mental intention, how you act, and what is the mental intention behind whatever you do. If it's on the first, it will only ripen when there is condition in this life. If there is no condition, it will just cease to be. Then on the 7th thought moment, it can carry on to the next life. If there is no condition, it also cease to be. But whatever karmic volition that happened between the 2nd to the 6th, they will be there forever. It will not disappear. Wherever, whichever life or segmented life that you arise, when there is condition, it will manifest. So this is the part they fail to understand, this karmic nature. This karmic nature is unique to every being. Every being that comes has its karmic nature. And this is the summation of everything that you do. So this is how law of karma operates. Yeah. And this one don't have to follow you like a soul. No. This one, that nature, is like your spiritual nature. It's within nature. Whatever you cultivated, perfected, it's all recognized there. Yeah. But spiritual nature is different from karmic nature, where it only records spiritual things, spiritual understanding, spiritual wisdom, perfection, and all things. And that one, you can only connect or inherit after you become enlightened, after you realize the true mind. Not until you go to the cessation of form and mind to connect to the true mind, you cannot inherit your spiritual nature. It's just like Sakyamuni Buddha. Before the 6th year when he was an ascetic cultivating, not until underneath the Bodhi tree that day, yeah, when he sat, meditate, and he connect, then he inherited the spiritual nature. That's why Sambhogakaya, the spiritual nature, come back to his Nimanakaya, and they combine, he become the Dhammakaya, means the Buddha that teaches the Dhamma, the Dhamma body. Yeah. So spiritual body combined with physical body or the functional body transform the Buddha into the Dhamma body that teaches the Dhamma. Mm. So this part is very important under Kamma Niyama. Yeah? Then we go to Dhamma Niyama. This one also he got it wrong. Completely wrong. Most of the time they talk about natural occurrences. It's not natural phenomena. No. The word here is wrong. It should be natural occurrences. It's actually... how should I use the word? It's not natural occurrences. It's actually a very unique occurrence. But these occurrences are associated with certain things, like the birth of the Sammasambuddha. It's a very rare situation, a very rare occasion. So whatever natural occurrences, or sometimes they call it special phenomena or sign. Yeah? That's why I don't use the word natural occurrences. Special occurrences or signs or phenomena that is associated with great beings, like the birth of the Buddha, the passing away of the Buddha, the enlightenment of the Buddha. A lot of things happen. You remember? Under the Dhammacakkappavattana-sutta, the Buddha mentioned, all the way from the human realm up to the highest, even the formless realm. All the world system, they rejoice. And when they rejoice, the effect is so great, you know, it starts to quake. Then everywhere people will be able to perceive it and know that it's happening. That's why in the ancient day, they can see the sign, stars, movement, and all those things, and they are sensitive to all these phenomena. That's why they know whether there's a birth of a great being, or the passing away of a great being, or a king. So they actually can see from the brightness of the star and the occurrences in heaven. So they call this Dhamma Niyama. This is only one small aspect of Dhamma Niyama. In Thailand, they call it Dhammachat, or nature's occurrences. But here, Dhamma Niyama means the order of Dhamma. Order of Dhamma means all of the truth, the essential Dhamma that the Buddha taught. Like the Four Noble Truths, the Paticca Samuppada, and all those related to the Dhamma that he has shared with us. So this Dhamma Niyama cover all the other truths that are not within the first four Niyama or truth. So number four should be Citta Niyama first, then Dhamma Niyama last. All the other truth not covered by the first four is under Dhamma Niyama. So Citta Niyama, he got it quite correctly. It's the order of the mind, but he forgot to mention the dependent origination, Paticca Samuppada, the 12 link. That is the most important under Citta Nupassana. Under Dhamma Nupassana, the main Dhamma is the Four Noble Truths. We are from the Four Noble Truths, all the essential Dhamma spin off from there. Okay? Then the part that page 347, the part that just now PG commented. Here the author say, the Buddhist aim at the final destruction of all karma. What do you think of this sentence? Can you destroy all karma? Cannot. Understand? So our aim is not to end all karma. Understand? The Buddhist aim is to realize enlightenment, Nibbana. When you realize enlightenment, which is the Nibbana that you realize, the form and mind that is connected to that realization have the wisdom, then it's no longer deluded by the phenomenal world. So when that happens, it will not suffer anymore. Even karma come, or what even the Buddha went through, he doesn't suffer anymore, where his mind is free, liberated. But the effect on the form and mind is there. But he will not be affected because he will not attach, he will not cling. That's why he will know how to use it. Until he told Ananda, I say, please don't ask me to extend my life anymore. This is like a worn-out block card waiting to collapse. So no point. Even though he can endure because of his wisdom, he will not be afflicted mentally. That's why he got no suffering. But the physical form and mind, which is a vehicle and tool that come, is subject to nature's law, goes away of nature. It will get sick, grow old, and finally disease. And it will collapse when the condition is no more supporting it. So when consciousness sees and separate, then the physical form cannot sustain itself. It will collapse. It will go the way of nature. Then the other wrong view was also before the advent of the Buddha's teaching in India, they believed that if you go and torture yourself, there's a lot of this type of practice of self-mortification. You subject your physical form and mind to a lot of suffering. They say mortify this body means thinking that by doing that, they are paying back their karma. Until one day when they exhaust all their karma, then they become enlightened. And this is wrong view. That's why that part, this author wrote, could have come from the Indian influence. Okay? Now we pass back to PG. Anything he want to add on this particular topic? We can also maybe make use of the earlier topic on the different inequality and all those occurrences that you see within our civilization, the cause of inequality and all those things, and your understanding of karma. If you got any question or anything that you have understood and you want to share, you can. We start with PG first. Then after that, we go around.
Okay. I've thought of this. Today is Tun Mahathir's birthday, so I will start with him. Okay. Since we are talking about karmic nature, now all the PMs or everybody who are where they are, can we say that it is already in their karmic nature that they will be somebody or meant to be somebody in one of their lifetime? So that means when there are causes and conditions in place, these people will become what they are. Like Dr. Mahathir will become the PM. Should we say that is how karma works?
Okay. So PG presented her comments. What do you all think? The others? Yeah. All these leaders, how they become leaders? Hey, there are a lot of, not everyone is like Tun, no? You got the one before Tun and also leader. But that one is another form. Yes.
Of course, like those, if your karma is not good, then there will be the rise and the fall. So all this is also part of your
okay,
karma.
Anybody want to try to answer what PJ has explained? Or put forward. How do you think these leaders can get their wish fulfilled? It's just like how you make your what? Aspiration, aditan, you know, the invoke power of merit. But all these politicians may not necessarily invoke power of merit alone. It's their righteousness, their belief, their passion, their love for leadership and other things. So what do they do? They will it. Understand? Or? You know what is will or not? No, determine, will. Yeah, they will it. It's not finally realized. But when you will it, it becomes very strong. Will, positive and negative also work on. Understand? No? You remember? Devadatta, when he will, life after life, he wants to come after the Bodhisattva to settle whatever bangle things that he has lost to him. Oh, that negative thought is so powerful. That's why it conditions the constant birth and rebirth following Sakyamuni all the way until the last birth and Sakyamuni became Sammasambuddha. Most of these people who are not spiritual cultivator, they use their mind, willpower. Like all the world champion, it's the same, I tell you. They will it. They want to become world champion. You think Dato' Lee Chong Wei flop? No flop. At this age, he can still compete. And he was world champion for so many years. You look at Nico, our what squash player. I tell you, she is also one of the very rare ones. Can be world champion in a sport where Malaysia never really known for this game, no. And not to say to be a world champion, no. Never even have player who can become like good player in that field. She was the first, no, to do it. Then after that, others follow. But so far, nobody can beat her. She was world champion for so many years. If I have my way, I would have recognized her good performance, and really award her properly, give her the appropriate recognition and all those things. But our country, you know, earlier on, just because she's not that race, that's why a lot of people didn't really do much. But also they think that sport is not a fantastic sport. What we are famous for is, of course, badminton. Every time we do well in badminton, the support is there. So all these people use will. So when you will it, it's mental power. Then those spiritual people, they invoke power of merits. When you invoke power of merits, yes, it can come. Then some of these world leaders, they want to bring about order to the world. Especially those leaders that have righteousness. They hold on to that principle of righteousness. And these people can become great beings. If they go the spiritual way, they will do very well. That's why I say leader, there are many types. There are a lot who will it, but they don't have righteousness. They got crooked mind. They don't hold on to that righteous thinking, the code of conduct, code of ethics. That's why today, I think on the news, I heard a few good news. Our Tun M is going to come out with what? Huh? Code of what? Huh? You all didn't listen to news. Code of ethics for all the civil servants. This is to inculcate righteousness, sincerity, truthfulness. They call it the code of ethics. But last time, our professional course also, we got code of ethics. But it's so difficult to implement them, because a lot of this code of ethics, when it comes to human beings, they really take advantage of it. They never follow. But sometimes you cannot blame the system. Because when you introduce a code of ethics, you have to introduce it correctly, appropriately, so that it is something feasible, appropriate, functional. Then people will follow. But when I give an example, my own profession. The reason why I look at it differently is because our profession is very strange. You know? I happen to be in the engineering field. So we got this institution of engineers, Malaysia, IEM. Then they got the board of engineers that the government set up to regulate all this. Then you got this professional ethic that governs your fees and all those things. Understand? Then your code of ethic, you cannot advertise, you cannot promote. Just like the doctor, they cannot advertise their service or not, because you're a professional. Then you cannot undercut each other. Then you cannot say bad things about each other. Means professional, brotherhood, and all those things. I mean, all this, if you really want to implement, it's not easy, understand or not? So what I would like is the system to be more comprehensive. Like your scale of fear, The scale of fee is very funny, you know. I look at it, I think they have to revamp it. Do you know, for us, engineering, especially civil engineering, if we have this government job, they will pay you the full scale of fee, you know. Full scale of fee is very high on. But private sector, nobody pay you full scale of fee. Otherwise, you cannot get any job on. So you have to somehow agree to what they want to pay you. Otherwise, unless you're very good. Yeah. So, like one highway, let's say. Highway sometimes can be very long, 100 kilometers or what. But highway design is the same one, that standard of road is the same one. But the scale of fee depends on the percentage of the project cost one, no? Do you know if I design 1 kilometer, my fee is for 1 kilometer. But if that highway happened to be 100 kilometer, my fee becomes 100 times. Do you understand? So, there's simply no logic. So to me, they should adjust all this and regulate. They should have the minimum scale of fee and all those things, because there are certain input that has to go in. Then there should be incentive for good design. Understand that? Good design means what? If I'm a good engineer, I can define cheap. I can design cheaper building and cheaper highway, save a lot of money for you. My fee go down. No? You understand that? Because my fee is based on percentage of work, the cost of the project. So if I save money for you, I get less fees. So what is the logic behind? They should have incentive for good design and all those things. That's why it has to be regulated in that sense. So sometimes I just tell myself while I was studying, I said, this professional ethic, if they don't regulate it properly, we used to joke in among classmates, ethics are for the birds. Yeah, you understand, huh? For the birds. The bird where got ethic on? They see the fruit, whoever go there first, they will get it, understand, huh? Oh, you think the bird talk ethic? Professional brotherhood. We tender, we bid. Professional, no need to tender one. Skill of fee established. You know. So everybody is same. You know. So a lot of things, you find it strange. Understand? Huh? Then to them, they promote professional brotherhood, but they don't go and incorporate all those aspects of what they call skill, like your talent, your special design ability and all those things. If you are good, it has to be rewarded, isn't it? Then the other thing about my profession is there is a professional exam where you can get your professional qualification, PE. And I tell you, for people who don't understand, you can get a shock. I can just submit a simple design or project for one small thing. Then if I go through the interview and I pass, given the professional qualification, technically I can sign any design. And that is so dangerous. And because of that, I see that the system is still got a lot of room for improvement. There's a lot of this thing, society needs to look at it and improve. Then this is what I think Tun M is doing now, the Pakatan Harapan. Because after his first round as Prime Minister, the third Prime Minister, then after he is no more, people abuse it and created such massive havoc and abuses. Until now, he got to look into it again and redo it. Yeah. Then the other thing that he come out with was political funding, which is very good. Yeah? You agree or not? Yeah, he also knew, he said, politics need funding. So they have a code of ethic for political funding. So all this need to be properly defined so that it can be regulated. Otherwise, like Mahathir, he know every time there's a money politic, he was so against money politic. He said every time when the politician depend on the private sector or whoever who sponsor their political funding, when they get elected, even US, everywhere, all over the world is the same. You have to actually give in to what they want. It's like, you help me, I help you. So this is where he see the danger of the country falling into failed state and all those things. Because when you have this type of situation, corruption will be encouraged. Because people use money to buy their support. And when money is involved, these politicians, after they win, their salary is limited. But they have to pay back the favor. So that will result in a lot of corrupt practices and all those things. So EU can regulate proper funding and proper what they call setup where politicians play their role of executive. Then the legislative also under the civilian of parliament and all those things that can regulate the legislative, the rules, the law and all those things. Then you have the independent judiciary that can actually give good judicial decision or judicial control, regulation over what the executive do. So these are check and balances that we need for our civilization to grow, to progress, so that the rakyat will benefit from all this. Then there is enough freedom of speech to discuss things, to debate things. Then all the laws that they come out with, not only the Senate will look at it, the social media, the people can play an active role. Then they can keep an eye on all this. When you have proper check and balance, there is a limit to what politicians can debate or do the funny thing. Okay, we got another 5 more minutes. Anybody want to add anything? Yes. Yeah. Here, Yinjan.
Just now, to add on to what PG was saying about the you're asking about the how the karma working, but and I think I noticed a number. It's within the family. They discuss a lot. You see, Razak's son Najib took over, and then he even Hishamuddin is in politics. Yeah. It's in a family. Yeah. It's like George Bush and his Bush Junior. They all run the family. The Kennedy also. Somehow other than the karma is that way.
Yeah, Yun Chan has a good point. So EU have been observing Malaysian politics. You see, start with Tunku. After Tunku, Razak. After Razak, Hussein On. Hussein On. Then Hussein On, Razak, they are related. Then Mahathir. He asked Hussein On to choose Mahathir. Then Mahathir like obligated to Razak. That's why he helped to choose Najib. So this one comes from the word Rahman. Understand? Rahman. After Tunku passed away, Rahman, the R, A is Razak. Then the H is Hussein On. Then the M is Mahathir. Then after that, you're supposed to have A. It's supposed to be Anwar. Then don't know what happened, it become Abdullah Badawi. So after Abdullah Badawi, Najib. Then they say, Rahman end with Najib. You understand? Then they also say, all the 9 of May one, 2016, 2017, all change leader one. Then it so happened I was 2018. He also choose 9 of May. I don't know why 9 of May is so popular. And he also got changed. So what happened is, you can see, like Yun Chan mentioned, the ending of this Rahman, then what is the next one? They believe the next one is what? Huh? Ah, Mahathir. So after Mahathir is A, Anwar. So like you just say, it runs in the dynasty because Hussein On, Tunku, Hussein On and this Raza and Najib, they are related one. They are cousin, I think. Raza and Najib and Hussein On, they are cousin brothers, cousins. So the way you look at it, there are a lot of this type of democracy where they try to, like ancient China, the emperor, they try to promote their descendant. Just now I heard the alarm. So 10:30 we better end. Okay, we should do the sharing of marriage, transfer marriage. Then you can have your makan. Okay, let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed tonight so that we can share this marriage, share and transfer this marriage to all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakan tu loka sasana itta watta chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu. Yawa nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, you can pay respect to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and all the worthy ones.